irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to All About Guitar with Jeff Willow, only on LA Talk Radio.
Amazing instrument. It has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. Where we discover how we can become better musicians in a world of constantly changing technologies. Where we take a good look at everything guitar. And sometimes not exactly guitar, but just as important. So we can be more successful as a musician in today's music scene. So sit back and relax, and let's explore All About Guitar. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to All About Guitar. We have a great show for you tonight. It's a cold, blustery night, but we're in here. It's nice and warm. I'm here with Lori. Lori, welcome.
Hello.
And my guest, an amazing guitar player, Mark Goldenberg. Welcome to the show, Mark.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Hey.
I was looking at, he, besides doing a lot of session work for such notables as Jackson Browne, Bonnie Raitt, Linda Ronstadt, Ringo, and many, many others, he's also a great composer, and we're going to take a look at some of his work, both as a solo artist and collectively with a collaboration with him and Eric Skye, and then also his new band Trio. So I want to start out immediately with just your background.
I grew up in a musical family. My mom was a pianist. Mm-hmm. She was a classical pianist. And on her side of the family, we had like a violinist, and my uncle was a singer. So we had music around us from day one. My dad wasn't a musician per se, but he loved music. So we, you know, me and my brother had like constant music and really interesting music. My parents were into classical music, so I just heard nothing but classical. But they also liked really weird stuff. Like my dad would come home every now and then with like a record of, for example, the Grand Prix. There'd be like a stereo record with like cars going around in stereo, and then bagpipe music. And then like one, then he got into bagpipes, and then he got into marching bands, and then there was a little area of like, you know, world, they called it ethnic music then. It was world music. We had like sitar music. We had kind of like everything. And then weird electronic music. My folks were kind of goofy, so they liked that stuff. But my dad loved classical guitar. He was like a super fan, you know. So he had a lot of classical guitar records that he would play all the time. So, and then at one point, he actually decided he was going to learn how to play classical guitar. And we lived in Chicago, grew up in Chicago, so he would take me downtown when he would take his guitar lesson after his work. And I would sit in the studio where he would take lessons with a guy named Richard Pick, who was Chicago's, at the time, foremost classical guitar teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And
great
so,
name.
Richard Pick, for a guy, great name for a guy who didn't play with a pick.
Pickless.
He was pickless. But a great teacher, and he wrote a number of books. He had a whole method, and he was really quite, really intelligent, beautiful, music-loving guy himself. So anyway, my dad used to go down there, and it was kind of like a father-son thing. We would go down and I would sit at the they had a little waiting area, and they had like Gibson catalogs. So I'd be like leafing through these Gibson catalogs, and my dad would go in for the lesson. And then this went on for like a year or so. And then one night, We were watching TV, and they're on the Ed Sullivan show. This band came on called the Beatles, right? Mm-hmm. And I was sitting there, and I saw that, and I said, Dad, I want to play guitar. And he said, literally, if you want to do that, you have to take classical guitar lessons first. So we struck up a deal that if I took classical guitar lessons for a year or something like that, he didn't really specify, and then I would, if I took the classical guitar lessons with Mr. Pick, then I would get an, at some point, he would get me an electric guitar and an amp.
Well, besides the Beatles, what else were you listening to? Because in listening to your music, and we'll play some clips in a minute, harmonically, it's very unique. I'm trying to pick where your influences are.
Well, my influences. Okay, you have to understand my folks didn't listen to any jazz, right? I didn't really hear jazz until like I was in college, really, like mm-hmm. seriously hearing jazz. You know, we had a little bit when I was in high school. We had like a jazz band, but I was somehow not quite there yet. But so I grew up listening to Stravinsky, a lot of classical. You know, my mom played Bach, and she played Brahms, and Debussy. She played a lot of Debussy, so I heard like a lot of like, you know, late 19th century through middle 20th century stuff. So that kind of was a big influence on me harmonically. Plus, the guy that I studied with, Richard Pick, he was really into impressionistic music. So even his like beginner pieces for guitar had a lot of harmony going on them. Mm-hmm. You know? So they weren't just like, we're going to play some scales. He had written some little pieces, and they all had like really interesting harmony. So I think I got tweaked by the harmony bug early.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's like the big influence there.
Well, besides the world music and some of the others, like you were saying, the bagpipes and all that stuff that your parents were listening to, did they listen to a lot of like 20th century, like the more weird stuff, like the atonal stuff?
Yes, they did, sir.
So
yeah, you know, do you remember that? You remember that scene in 2001
mm-hmm.
when they're like, they get to the moon and they're digging out the big
monolith,
right? And there's all this like weird choir music that's not like completely atonal.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty much the breakfast music we had at our house. You know, they were really musically curious. Like my dad would like, you know, they like once a week we'd go downtown and go to the record store. My dad was always buying records, and there'd be like, you know, constant flow of music in my house that was, you know, it was more than just the Beethoven and the Bach. It was Stockhausen, Ligeti,
yeah, that's
Xenakis.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't really get it. Go for the, you know, like, I remember my dad brought home In C by Terry Riley, which was like one of the first of the minimalist composers. That didn't really get them. That was like a little too repetitive for them, but they kind of like dug it anyway, you know.
Now, did they like electronic music when they?
They did. They liked electronic.
Because you're coming into classical music with this like very sophisticated harmonic background. I mean, you're hearing stuff that's like way beyond what most people would even.
Yeah, it was kind of goofy, but on the other okay, there was a flip side to this, right? When I was in high school, I was playing electric guitar, and I was really I came up in that era of psychedelic rock, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
So as a kid, when I became a teenager, of course, I decided, you know, I'm sick of that, all that classical stuff. I want to be in Cream. And I want to be in, you know, Yardbirds and all that guitar-oriented stuff. So I really got kind of obsessed with that, you know, European fuzzy blues thing.
So you were into the blues. But like a little bit later, did you get into the prog?
I think I inherited that same kind of wide-ranging music.
Because, yeah, it would seem that would be...
I got into... I mean, I do, you know, I have a copy still of, you know, Tarkus.
Mm-hmm.
And,
mm-hmm.
Yay.
You know, I liked a
great
lot,
album.
I liked a lot of stuff. Like, I would, like, devour records, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, I really, like, for example, I was, like, obsessed with Procol Harum for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I had, like, every record they ever made. You know, Salty Dog, still a great record.
It's a classic.
So, you know, it's kind of hard for me to be pinned down at stuff I like because I liked so much stuff. But I also had to, you know, I was in Chicago and I had friends and I played music with them. And we went through kind of different periods. You know, we started out as being kind of playing covers, you know, just to learn how to play. We played, we played songs, and then we kind of developed as a band and kind of got a little more psychedelic. And then when I was, really when I became like a junior in high school, I got in a band with a bunch of older guys. Right, older, I mean like they were 21.
Yeah.
You know, and they, in at that time in Chicago, if you wanted to actually make some money playing music, you'd have to play soul music, right? So I got in a band with a bunch of older guys who said, hey, all that stuff you're listening to is really cool. Hey, why don't you check this out? This guy, B.B. King. And, you know, then Stax Volt Records and all that other stuff. So I kind of got a whole education again in order to be play with this working band. We played, like, all sorts of stuff. And we played, once I got in the band, we started working. I was playing, I was in high school and I was still starting to, I was starting to play, like, you know, three or four nights a week. And then when I got graduated high school, we were playing five to six nights a week in the bars in Chicago, places like Mother's and Rush Up. You know, we played, we were a good band. We played, you know, dance music for the people late.
It's amazing scene, yeah. Too. Yeah. So with what you learned from your parents and all that really 21st, that 20th century music, and then going, you know, because what I want to, what I want the audience to understand is harmonically, you're going to hear it in some of the examples, the type of music you, that's very sophisticated stuff, and the way you utilize that in your songs. And actually, let me play a piece right now from your solo album that you did from 2004, if I'm correct.
Yes.
Let me play the piece, and then we'll talk a little bit about it. This is the middle section. These are much, I'm just pulling a clip out, but it, this clip is about 2 minutes. And this is called Bring. And let me just play this for you, and then we'll talk a little, because there's, we were talking a little bit before the show, there's an interesting backstory about this whole thing. So here's Bring. Now, what I want the audience to take note is harmonically what you're doing in those changes is pretty sophisticated. I mean, it's very it's a beautiful melody.
Gorgeous. So beautiful.
And but I mean, what you're doing is a lot. It's subtle, but there's a lot of interesting changes that are going on
in there. There's that Latin vibe to it. Also.
Well, okay, so there's a lot of stuff going. There's a lot of stuff to say about that era of what I was playing. First of all, I just come off of 10 years. Of studying guitar with Ted Green.
Mm-hmm.
Ted Green was a local. Well, he's legendary. Was a legendary. He still is legendary. He was while he was alive. He was a legendary teacher of guitar in Los Angeles. And anybody, I bet you like 50% of the guys that come in to play for you at least had a lesson with Ted along the way if they were here in LA. So he. For a long time, I was actually away from the guitar in terms of a composing instrument. When I went to music school, I had to kind of play piano because at the time, they didn't even offer guitar as a study. So I studied piano, and then when I came to Los Angeles, I continued studying piano and counterpoint with a teacher here named Abby Fraser, and he was great, and I played a lot of piano with him. And the guitar was always in the corner, kind of going, hey, you know, remember me? Remember you started on me? But I went through a phase where I would play it, but it wasn't like, I wasn't deep into it. And unfortunately, Abby passed away, and I started looking at that guitar, and the guitar said, you ready? Are you getting ready? And I said, well, I'm not sure. You know. So, long story short, I'd kind of started picking up the guitar, and I realized, hey, maybe I should find somebody to help me learn my way around the guitar better, because I'd taken classical guitar lessons as a kid, and then it kind of stopped with the lessons, and then, you know, I started working and kind of, you know, teaching myself, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
I found Ted, and he was like, I'll tell you, here's my story with Ted. I go to my first lesson with Ted Green, and he says, oh, Mark, play me something. I know you know, at the time I was really into Brazilian music. You could hear some of the Brazilian influence in that tune. So I played my, like, best, most sophisticated thing that I could think of on the guitar that was kind of Brazilian, and it was like, you know, I was playing whatever fancy chords I kind of knew, kind of half knew. And he looked and he went, great, Mark, it's electric folk.
And I
went, okay. And then he kind of went, then he played it back. He played what I just played to him back at me. And then he played it like 10 different ways. He said, well, you could have done it like this. And maybe if you were Mozart, you would have done it like this. And then he went out and this whole thing. And I'm like my jaw is just dropping lower and lower and lower and lower and lower and lower and lower. So finally. So I went, yeah, can we take lessons now? You know? So I studied with him for a long time. So he... an incredible musical mind. He's like the biggest, in terms of guitar playing, he would be the major influence on my playing. So he also, of course, had a lot of love of harmony. So like the stuff that you hear harmonically, I think that's the fruit of studying with Ted and, you know, really kind of digging into those, into the chord voicings. And
yeah, but I mean, they're interesting changes. Let's talk a little bit about that tone, your tone on this piece is just incredible. I thought we talked a little bit before the show. I thought it was a classical guitar, but tell us the story about that.
Well, I was writing these tunes, and they were. I was starting to toy with the idea of going out and playing solo guitar by myself, right? Mm-hmm. And I had never done that before, so I started like tuning my guitar lower and lower and lower because I thought if it was like lower, if the bass notes were lower and fatter, I would be less nervous, you know, like if I went out on a gig, it somehow would be a bigger sound. So, and I also was finding that I needed a guitar that was kind of easy to play because this, I was like grabbing a lot of chords, you know. Some of this other stuff on the record is just like, you know, it's like gymnastics or something. So I had this archtop jazz guitar. It was a mid-60s Epiphone Howard Roberts, which I still have. I love that guitar. I tuned it down. I ended up, I was just listening to this composition, I think I was tuned down to C, either C sharp or C, but I'm pretty sure I was down to C on that guitar, so I might have been using like really heavy strings,
wow,
low action, and down in the basement. It's an archtop. It doesn't, in order to get that sound, basically, you know, if you heard that guitar acoustically, it's not much, it's not much louder than that, maybe a little bit louder. So I ran a couple mics. I put an 87 kind of in front of the sound. It has it's an arch top with a center hole. It's kind of unique.
Oh, really? Okay.
It's definitely a weird kind of guitar. So I put the 87 in front of the near the center hole, and then I had a 414 kind of down off the body. And I also ran a DI and just ran it into my computer. So I had like basically three sound sources. Most of it, what you heard, is the microphone. So the microphones were there, and I kind of was able to get a good stereo balance with them, and then I used a little bit of the DI to kind of just
so
fill
the
mids.
The mic was about a foot away?
Yeah, it was just kind of, it was like a, they were actually pretty close.
What mic did you use?
A 414 on the body down here, and then over the a U87 over the center hall. Now, while I was recording that record, you know, I had to like crank up the gain on the mics just to get the right level. So everything that I did, like a button, sounded like a truck driving by. And at the first pass on recording the record, I had a cold. And when I was listening, so I recorded the first day. I recorded a song, and I'm playing it back, and I'm hearing, I go, I'm looking around my room because it sounds like somebody was like snoring in my room. And I look around, there's nobody there. And it took me a while, of course, not being so bright. I realized that it was my breathing that was the mic was picking up. So I had to actually train myself to kind of hold my breath while I recorded. So that's how, you know, so the second batch of recordings, it's like basically me going, play. Yeah. Why is this song getting faster at the end? Because I'm running out of breath. You know, I really trained myself to breathe quietly. It was a really interesting period. And then, of course, during that era, I somehow got pink eye at the same time. So pretty much basically recorded it with my eyes closed.
Well, I'm going to play another clip. This one I want to see what you, this is has more electronics in it. It's called SWG.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to ask you, we'll play the clip first so everybody hears it, because it's an interesting phasing on the guitar. And then, so I want to know what you used on it and which guitar.
Okay.
And then it also is another good example to show the diversity, because what you do electronically is interesting too, and I think it's unique. I don't hear people use like the way you're using the effect is very subtle, but it's there.
Okay,
so take a listen. Now, I love that. What were you using on that?
Well, if I remember correctly, what I did was I put an auto panner on the DI sound. So the mics didn't move. And I did it on this record in Pro Tools, obviously. Even 2004, it was on Pro Tools. So I put it was kind of a rotating auto panner, but it might have had a little bit of modulation on it. So that was on the direct signal. So it's kind of like going back and forth. This is a good one for headphones, you know?
Yeah, well, they're hearing it in stereo.
Yeah, so you could like, you know, I thought it would like knock you off. If you're riding a bike, you might fall over. So part of it is like kind of wobbling back and forth between speakers, but the acoustic part of the guitar I don't think is affected as much. But I also noticed that I cranked up the effects on this tune. So because it's one of those tunes that has a lot of air on it, you know, I play a chord and then I wait, and I play a chord and then I wait. So what I used for reverb and the way I basically used the same tone settings on this whole record. I used a Cathedral reverb program from something called Altiverb.
Yeah.
Right? And so it has a really, actually, very long decay. And then I also added in some delays that were modulating. So a modulating delay is a delay that actually has an LFO on it. So the delay pitch bends a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So as it pitch bends, it's almost like you're getting a delayed chorus effect.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some wiggle wobble to the note, but it's not like the initial note that you hear. It's like all the wobbling is happening on the ambience around it. So a combination of that ambience from the church itself also has a bit of like a kind of wobbliness to it. And the delay gives the effect of almost like a, you know, not centered pitch thing. So it has a little motion to it. And then on top of that, adding that auto panning sound kind of gives the whole thing.
So that's all you were using. You weren't using a phaser or a, like, because it almost sounds like a Univibe.
I was thinking, well, it's a Univibe, but it's not. It's kind of stereo-ish.
Yeah.
It's possible. You know, I don't, you know, 2004. I don't remember, you know, everything exactly, but I do remember.
It doesn't quite sound like, it's not like a phaser, but it has that kind of modulation of that, like the Univibe has like a, it's a weird, it could be just the effects of all that stuff that you're talking about, the way it mixed together, it just made that.
Exactly. So, well, you know, I'd have to ask the engineer, but I am the engineer.
You made soup, electronic soup.
I made some soup. I made a nice soup.
But I mean, and this album too, is it just called Mark? I don't know
Yeah, it's just called Mark Goldenberg.
Mark Goldenberg. The album, it has some really nice stuff, and he does some things with it's all electric. Which guitar did you use on that?
On the same guitar.
Same guitar, and was it tuned down?
Apparently.
Because it sounded
really
pretty deep.
I heard a low bass note, and I went, that's got to be a C. So. And that's gotten me into some trouble because I've had a couple people ask for transcriptions, and I had a lovely guy in the area, Adam Perlmutter, who did some transcriptions of a couple of these pieces. But I had to give him the key, and he did them as if we were playing in E. But, you know, their true pitch is pretty low. So
right.
There's no tab, accurate tab for those pieces.
Well, let's talk a little bit now about the album Artifact that you did with Eric Skye. Two guitar players, a duel. I'm going to play a clip. This is a song called Golden from the album. And what I want everybody to listen to is the interplay harmonically and rhythmically between the two guitars. Because he's doing, again, harmonically wise, it's pretty sophisticated stuff. And the way the guitars play against each other, because they're doing cool chords, but they're juxtaposed against each other. And it's a real interesting, I mean, it's very complex, but really nice. I mean, it really fits. It's not like you would think it would clash, but it doesn't clash. So let me play Golden, and then we'll talk a little bit about that whole experience. This is Golden from the Artifact album.
Thank you.
it's a beautiful piece, but it's interesting how the interplay. Now, was that written out? How did you approach this album? This is an interesting...
Okay, so Eric and I have known each other for a number of years, and we met on one of those guitar player in around things that a friend, we have a mutual friend who's doing a show, put us both on the show together, and we met, and we went, hey, I like the way you play. And he went, I like the way you play. And we kind of hit it off. So we kind of every now and then would get together and do some shows. And I would write some, our deal was we would each write some compositions and bring them in, and then we'd play them as duos, right? Our other deal was that we would never rehearse. So, because we would much rather hang out and have lunch than practice.
Okay. Okay.
So, really, our get-togethers consisted of, hey, let's run through a tune. He said, yeah, okay, great. And then, what do you want to do for lunch? And then we'd go out and we'd find someplace to eat. So we would never, we would rehearse enough to learn the songs, but we would send each other the songs via, you know, email.
That was before doing the recording, though.
No, the recording, okay, so that's kind of the way we operated. Before we even made a record, we would write a tune, we would play, get together and play.
Did he live here before?
He lived in Portland. That's why we didn't play together all that much.
He lived in Portland now, though, right?
Yeah, yes.
Yeah, that's
always what
I remember. Because we were going to have him on the show last year.
That's right, and he was going to come in.
So hi, Eric, I hope you're listening.
I hope so, too, because I'm going to do a lot of lying right now. I just want you to take some notes and correct me, okay?
Phone in.
We decided we were going to make a record because we were really, you know, hey, we were going to do a record. So we literally recorded this whole album in the morning. We went, I have a friend who has a studio near my house, a lovely lady named Lynn Earle. She has a great little studio. We set up two mics. We kind of like, basically set up like you and I, like we're this far from each other, each with a mic on a guitar. About 5 feet. We each had a mic on our guitar. We recorded the entire album in the morning. And then, of course, we
went to lunch.
Are we done yet? I'm hungry.
Did you have like a chord chart to tell you where you're going, or you just...
We both would send each other. What would usually happen is we would send each other chord charts and a recording of one of us playing two. Now, that Golden is actually his composition. So when you hear the melody, that's Eric playing, and I'm on the other side.
I was going to ask you that. Who's on the top and who's on the bottom?
Musically speaking, Eric would be on the top. So basically, if I bring a tune in, I usually end up playing the melody, and then we improvise from that. But basically, what we did was we recorded how we play our gigs, is which we'll play our tune, we improvise. The way we do it isn't quite the same as, like, you know, if we're playing on a jazz gig and we play the head and then, like, you know, we each take a solo.
Right.
It's more like a musical conversation where one of us will, you know, maybe start, you know, it's like a conversation in my house, you know, when somebody, you know, will take the lead and then, you know, they'll say their thing, but there's always other stuff bubbling underneath. So we kind of, it's more like an ebb and flow situation. So it isn't like, it's Mark's solo or it's Eric's solo, although sometimes it's like that, but other times we're just playing at the same time. So Eric is a guy who also has a pretty wide harmonic vocabulary, so there's a lot of notes, a lot of chords going on sometimes.
Yeah,
so you get like a rich stew of harmonic info.
Because what you're playing under what he's playing melodically, you know, it sounds to, if just listening to it real quick or something like that, it sounds like, okay, yeah, you're playing these nice chords, but you're doing more. There's like add this, there's little subtle harmonic things that you're doing in those chords that are just very cool. And as a guitar player, I can hear, I was like, oh, wow, he threw that in there. You know?
Well, you know, I think we both approach guitar in a way where it's not, we're always playing melodies, whether we're playing support or playing up front. You know, it's more like playing melodies all the time. Like if I'm just comping him, I'm not just going to go, you know, I'll play. Mm-hmm. You know, so I'm trying to do something more than just kind of do support chords.
Right.
I'm also trying to do an accompaniment that sounds complimentary, yet if you were, you know, if your attention went, okay, I've heard him play the melody and let's see what he's doing, there's something interesting going on there. So it's kind of, it's not like the traditional, like one guy playing the rhythm and you know, just playing chords and the other guy plays the melody. So what we did was we recorded an album in the morning, and then it took us 3 months to edit it. But it wasn't, we left in all the mistakes, basically. So what we edited is, what we edited out were like sections that were like, okay, you know, Mark's taking a solo. Now he's still soloing. And like 5 minutes later, he's still soloing. Okay, maybe we could cut out.
Yeah.
Some of the, you know, we decided together, okay, this section isn't so great, so we cut out a section. So basically we did a little bit of sculpting in terms of the architecture. Mm-hmm. But we left whatever clams in. You know, there weren't, fortunately, we didn't have any, like, horrible clams. We had one, there was one little clam that we actually had to work hard to repair, but we didn't want to, like, we couldn't go back in and, like, replay it. But we had to kind of like doctor something up, but it was very kind of a small, like a technical thing.
No, for a minute when you said it took that long to edit, I was like, that's a long lunch.
That was a really long lunch. We ordered in.
But I wanted to point out something that just blew me away right now when you were just demoing. I want you to play this guitar a little bit. Listen to this guitar. This is an electric guitar, but it sounds like an acoustic. The overtones that he's getting from these strings are just amazing. Can you talk a little bit about this guitar and play some more? Because I want this, the tone of this thing is killer.
Okay, so what I've got here is, it looks like a Telecaster, but on the headstock it says Danocaster.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a guy in Nashville named Dan Stain, and he makes Telecasters or Telecaster-like guitars. He puts together really, really nice guitars. There's a shop in Burbank that I frequent called LA Vintage Gear.
Mm-hmm.
And I went in there and I played this guitar. I walked in there and said, hey, which is the best one in here? And they pointed at this one. And I said, well, it's awfully brown. And I picked it up and I went, oh, yeah, this is the one. So this particular guitar, like all of his guitars are really great. He's got a small team. It's not a one-man shop, but he makes basically Fender-style guitars, Tellys, Strats. That's his thing. He does some Jazzmaster, Jaguar-type things, too. So so this particular guitar just has an unbelievable, sustain-y, piano-like quality for a Telecaster, which is also still my favorite style of guitar. It's just got a... just a very sweet...
He's playing with fingers, but it just sounds almost acoustic. When you were playing that other part down there...
It has a thing.
Now, when you did that... The Golden, were you using acoustic or electric?
Acoustics. We both played acoustics. So Eric has his own model of guitar, because he's Eric Sky. He has an Eric Sky model,
mm-hmm.
made by Santa Cruz Guitars.
Mm-hmm.
And it's what we call, if you use the Martin terminology, it's a 00 size, 12-fret guitar, meaning so it the neck joins the body at the 12th fret. So mm-hmm. there's not a lot of... You can't play too much further above the 12th fret, although he does.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a small-bodied acoustic guitar. His is a little bit deeper than a standard 00, and he's got some other tweaks that, you know, he worked with the guys at Santa Cruz to make a guitar that's exactly what he wanted. Mm-hmm. So that's a really nice guitar, super great, and it's perfectly suited for him. It's a Canon. It's for its size, it's surprisingly loud, and it's got a really great tone. You can tell it's got a lovely quality. And I used a Collings 00, also the same size guitar. They call it an 001MH because it's a 001, I think, is the least ornate and MH means mahogany. So mine is all mahogany, top, back, and sides.
Oh, top two.
Yeah, top two. So that guitar is a killer acoustic. It has that same kind of piano-like quality. I guess when I look for a guitar, I want something that really, you know, if I hit a note, I like to get the maximum sustain and just like as much time out of the note. You know, the note dies, but I'd like it to kind of like ring as much as possible. And also to have, like this guitar, you know, if I play in this area of the neck, it really has a very kind of, you can notice it has a kind of a tubey, really round tone, right? And if I play down here.
And he's using the neck pickup.
Yeah, it's all neck pickup for me, pretty much.
Does Dan Stain make his own pickups?
No. It's interesting. He makes a guitar and then he'll put, he has a number of pickup manufacturers that he uses, and he kind of matches the pickups to the guitar that he makes. There's a company in Nashville called Buds Pickups, B-U-D-Z. Mm-hmm. And that guy makes this set that's in this guitar. And I think they're kind of, he and Dan kind of work on a tele set together.
Because just the tone, I mean, and then also, too, when you're playing with fingers, and all those inner lines that you're playing are just ring out.
It's a very ringy guitar.
Even with acoustic guitars, to get those middle voices to be clear and prominent, that's a sign of a good guitar.
Absolutely.
So, no, that's a beautiful sounding. Now, real quick, too, since you brought it down, tell us a little bit of what you have on your pedal board, because obviously the delay, you're hearing a little bit.
So what I'm doing here is I'm plugging into your amp, which is a little Marshall, running its clean tone. It's a lovely sounding amp. And then I basically have my standard pedal board, which is, I have seven pedals on my pedal board.
Mm-hmm.
What you're hearing, I have a couple. I'm running first. I run into a Petty John lift pedal, which is a booster. It's also a bit of an EQ, and it's also a buffer. So when I have long cable runs, or you know, I have seven pedals, I really want to preserve the tone of my instrument.
Mm-hmm.
So like if I plug my guitar right into the amp right now, it wouldn't sound that different. If I didn't have the buffer in here, I think it would sound a little bit, the tone would be better if I just plugged into the amp.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So you're not really hearing the boost part of that right now, but you're hearing the buffer. And then after that, I have a couple of overdrive pedals. I have a Petty John, well, I hope I got this right, this is the Chime, which with my own music, I'm not using a whole lot of overdrive, but I have like a pedal there in case I have to play with the blues guys or something. And then after that is a fuzz tone called the Broadcast, which comes from Hudson Electronics in England. Really interesting germanium. It's an overdrive to a boost, but it has a kind of unique quality to it. I use it in kind of a more extreme setting when I play with the trio.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, if I want to quote like more sustainy, electric-y, mm-hmm. leady kind of sound, I use that one because it just doesn't, it sounds a little bit different. And I really like that. It has like one big red knob on it. That's really appealing. After that is something called the Freeze pedal, which is this little, it's almost like a little micro sampler. So if I wanted to just create a little drone to play with, I can just like play two notes and then hit the Freeze pedal and it'll hold those two notes indefinitely.
Right.
And then I have a little looper, a Boss looper, which it's been on there for about 2 years and I still haven't used it. But I'll keep going. I got to do some looping because Bill Frisell does looping. Yeah, but I haven't really quite got
there. Hang out with James Lee Stanley.
Exactly. Yeah. My looping technique is so terrible. It's like, you know, some people, you know, even the, and the Boss will help you, you know, like it'll kind of quantize your loop so it comes back in rhythm.
Yeah.
I don't quite got it. So, but I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful that someday looping will happen. Then, so after that really is my core delay thing. If I change pedal boards, like to go to the bigger one and smaller one, I always just take that one off and put it on there. I really love this echo. It's called the Echo Rec, and it's made by a company up in the Pacific Northwest, Cattle and Bread.
Oh, okay. It's not the Benson Echo Rec.
It is a simulation of the Benson Echo Rec. And, of course, as we've found out earlier, that I'm obsessed with modulating delays. It has a nice modulating delay. Mm-hmm. It has a trim pot on the inside, so you could set how much wiggle you want. And then it will do this thing where, you know, like the Benson Echo Rec, which was an echo machine that had multiple echo head tape heads, you can kind of simulate the multiple head positions. I don't really do it that much, but it's nice to know. I've done it on a session occasionally where I wanted to get that more of a Hank Marvin-y kind of sound. Mm-hmm. So I kind of leave it on a basic one repeat sound that has got some modulation, but it's also got, it's kind of dark.
Yeah.
So the delays just kind of, they're not like, right, you can tell it's not, they're very kind of murky.
Yeah, know? Well, so, that's supposed to, like a tape.
Exactly. Maybe. So when I play, you don't hear the delay so much as like some kind of garbage going on in the ambient backgrounds. And then after that, I have a Strymon Flint pedal, which is a reverb and tremolo pedal, for example. Usually I use an amp. My own amp has that I use all the time is a Fender Princeton Reverb. It has reverb and tremolo, but occasionally I'll go somewhere that amp doesn't have reverb or tremolo, so I have that just in case.
We're almost out of time.
No!
I told you it was going to go by fast, but real quick, we're going to take us out with a clip from your latest group, Trio.
Yes.
What I want to do, and that's with Jennifer Condos on bass and Jay, if I'm saying their names right, Belarus on drums and percussion.
Yes.
Now, tell me a little bit about, I got to rush you on this. Give me a little bit about the whole approach of the Trio. And also, too, real quick, what amp do you use live?
Princeton Deluxe Reaver.
Princeton Deluxe.
That's what I use live.
So tell us a little bit about the approach of the Trio and kind of set up. And then we're going to take us out with Blues for Rollo.
Okay. So what we do, let's see, the Trio... We basically do tunes that I write. They're my compositions. It is a little bit like a jazz band where, you know, I'll play some melodies and then I'll play solos. But the way that we do it is maybe a little bit different because we're really great listeners. And we play really quietly and we interact with each other. So it's not like, you know, we're going to go out there and we're going to shred. We really try to listen to each other and see what's going on. So we set up in a circle. We kind of play at each other as opposed to playing to each other as opposed to like playing facing to the audience so much. So we really like to get, when we play together, we really get in our own little musical universe, right?
Yeah.
So it's really, this is another exercise in communication. Like we're playing, we have tunes, but we're really kind of playing off each other as much as possible.
Now, so people can hear, when is Trio playing? Do you have any recent upcoming gigs
that you can
announce?
This Saturday, we're going to be playing at Genghis Cohen in West Hollywood, where you can go hear us play and also have a delightful Chinese meal.
Kosher.
I don't know if it's kosher.
It's gourmet. It's kosher.
Is it kosher?
Yes.
Okay.
Kosher, gourmet, Chinese.
I did not know that.
I've never heard of that.
You know,
it is.
I always go and get the egg roll. I've always like threatened to play slide with an egg roll. but I usually end up eating it. So.
Yes.
But it's a great place to play.
It's a great listening room and great for this trio.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just geared for listening. It's beautiful.
And check out Trio. Trio, as I understand, is download only right now?
I have rebuilt my website. So there are hard copies. There are down. You can download it if you want. It's available on iTunes and Amazon and all the...
And so check out Trio, check out Artifact with Eric Skye, great album.
Also available.
And this and the Mark Oldenburg album.
Exactly.
So I want to thank you. Lori, what's going on? Anything you want to...
Always things going on. Let's see. This coming Friday, I think I might have said this last time, but this coming Friday we have what I'm calling the super group with at the Sister Club of Genghis Cohen, which is Molly Malone's. And that's going to be Jeff Young with Osnoy, amazing guitarist. Maybe we'll get him in here at some point, but he doesn't live here. So, and Steve Ferroni on drums and Will Lee on bass. And tickets are still available, but they're going quickly. And then in March, we've got the Tribe is going to be doing covering Elton John's Goodbye Elbrick Road, again, start to finish, classic double album, which I'm part of. And that's going to be on March 11th.
Mm-hmm.
You can check that out on the Bogies website or Eventbrite.
Well, I want to thank you, Lori, for introducing me to Mark. This is great. And Mark, you got to come back. We got a lot more to talk about.
We haven't even touched scratched the surface here.
That, truly.
And you'll probably have another album by then, too.
I will.
Yes, yes.
I know you.
So, anyway, everybody.
Do you teach, by the way?
I do.
Mention that.
I teach privately. I'm also starting this in April. I'll be teaching a couple days a week at the Los Angeles College of Music.
Oh, nice.
Oh, very cool.
You can also get, if you were interested in studying like classical guitar with me, I teach through the Los Angeles Guitar Academy. I'm a teaching fool.
Yeah.
I love to teach.
I might have to take a lesson.
And for more information on Mark and what he's doing, markgoldenberg.com. And you can get the albums, and there's all sorts of cool things on there to check out. Okay, so we're going to end with Blues for Rollo. Thank you again. Thank you, Lori. This is a great, again, you'll listen to the interaction between the three of them. There's space in there, but it's perfect. I mean, the way it blends. And I love your tone on the guitar on this thing. So everybody have a great week, and we will see you next week. Here's Blues for Rollo.